This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Violence in Chicago, flying drone bombs and an assassination attempt of Maduro. Wow. Chaos in Venezuela, specifically in Caracas, and the California wildfire, fifth largest in history, not to mention the politics of the day. Tons going on. Kate Delaney broadcasting from Sedona, Arizona. Hey, everybody. So let's jump first to the I'm going to jump to the flying drones. I think this is the craziest story, and the photo that I saw was frightening. So President Nicolas Maduro claims he was the subject of an assassination plot using explosive rigged drones, and he says it's the people who are far right Venezuelan exiles living in Florida and Colombia that were after him. Maduro was addressing a military parade in Caracas on live TV when he suddenly halted and looked into the sky after hearing an explosion. He and his wife were swamped with aides carrying bulletproof shields, but they both escaped uninjured. Smoke could be seen coming out of a building window at the site of the incident. He promised a crackdown on his rivals, vowing to bring down the people responsible no matter who falls. He said, "This is absolutely an attempt to kill me," and there were a number of suspects arrested without elaborating any further on who they were. They talked about it. It was really crazy to see the photos from that. I have to say, you could see that his wife had sort of ducked, and it's weird because Maduro has been in power for how long now, as you've got hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans fleeing the country, food, medicine just not available, inflation sky high, ridiculous. He's a socialist leader. He took over for the butcher, Hugo Chavez, in 2013, and he's accused the opposition and the United States of working together to kind of come up with a coup to topple him. But who knew? Use the drones, because the drones can carry something explosive. And so this is how he says the latest attempt is to use the drones to do that. It wasn't about drones, but closer to home, sad tales again coming out of Chicago. I know many of you listen to us in the great state of Illinois. And I got to tell you, as a kid, I loved going to Chicago to visit my Aunt Nancy and seeing the ballparks and, you know, eating the food, meeting the people. I thought it was just a great city, but, you know, 63 people shot, 10 fatally, and there's more that are shaky at this point. And there was a 2.5 hour period where 25 people were shot in these 5 different multi-injury shootings. And, you know, people were at barbecues. People were doing what you do early on a Saturday night. This happened before 8 o'clock. You know, had 3 people who were standing in front of a house when a shooter got out of a car and opened fire. There was a 17-year-old girl that was killed who had nothing to do with any of this. And I said this on a previous show, but look, these gang idiots, if they're going to kill each other, kill each other. Don't kill innocent people. What is life worth if you're just shooting into crowds? That's ridiculous. And Chicago's a nightmare. It's a nightmare with this stuff. So Rahm Emanuel, who's the mayor, get it together. Figure out task forces, whatever you have to do. I know that's a Mary Poppins kind of approach, but there has to be a way to crack down on this. It's outrageous. Do something. Lock them up. Figure out a way to patrol these areas. And I don't blame the cops, because, I mean, again, what is it that you do? How do you fight this? And the answer is, the answers aren't easily available, but there has to be some other way to combat this, for goodness sake. Speaking of combating something that's out of control, massive fire in Northern California, this wildfire destroying 68 homes, forcing just thousands of people to flee the area. It's the fifth largest now in the state. It's like numbers, getting big numbers, used to be something exciting. Not exciting when you're talking about fires. Nobody wants to be the victim of the fifth largest fire ever. But you have high temperatures, again, strong wind. And what happens? It makes the fire spread. So Mendocino is one of the 17 major wildfires burning across California. And the president on Sunday had to declare a major disaster in the state, ordering federal funding to be made available to help the recovery efforts, saying that was what they had to do. And, you know, the assistance can help for temporary housing, home repairs, low-cost loans, whatever it takes. But this is bad. And you got firefighters who are trying to contain that horrible car fire. And they say, that's what they're calling it, it's about 41% or so contained. But these fires in Cali, just a nasty bit of business where people have no real ways to fight the fire other than to get out when they're told they have to evacuate so they can save their lives, because we've heard of some sad stories of people who did not get out and it was too late for them to save the people because the fire just engulfed them, which is horrific. I mean, just absolutely terrible. All right, so let's move to something else. You know, as we kind of traverse, I say that America Tonight is about, what our buzz is in the backyard, what we're talking about, and we're talking about a whole bunch of things is what we're talking about. Whether we're talking about what's happening in our lives with kids in school, or whether we're talking about the weather, or whether we're talking about taxes, or talking about something else that affects all of us. And what affects us is the economics, and what else affects us is the economics of what's going on in our respective areas. Like, you know, for example, as I travel, I don't know how people can afford to live in California and how they can afford, speaking of those wildfires, how they can afford to live there and how they can afford to live in New York. I am stunned by the amount of taxes they pay in both of those areas. Just crazy, absolutely crazy. All right, so how about this? The president was pretty happy over the weekend. He touted his approval rating. He says, you know what, it might be a red wave. And what he said in a tweet, he said, presidential approval numbers are very good, strong economy, military, and just about everything else. Better numbers than Obama at this point. By far, we are winning on just about every front, and for that reason, there will not be a blue wave, but there may be a red wave. 48% of likely voters approve of Trump's job performance, according to Rasmussen. That's one report. They released that just a couple of days ago. Gallup has the president with a 40% approval rating compared to Obama's 45. Real Clear Politics says Trump's approval rating on the economy is at 50.3. That's the rating. And the overall job approval sits at 43. Over the weekend, the Prez was at a rally in Ohio. He talked about a couple of different things. He's stumping for Republicans, of course, around the country. That's the main reason here ahead of the November midterm elections. So that was a big reason for that, because you've got Democrats who are slight favor to take over the lower chamber. So that's the job of the Prez, to look at the rest of the team. And so he's either doing those rallies or being part of the rallies and then stumping for whoever it is that he's working with to try to get them elected. And this time it happened to be Ohio. All right, stay with us. A great show for you as we continue to roll on here on America Tonight.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
Several years ago, I was developing a very severe situation. I called it my flippy heart. It was doing not good things. And I did not want to go to a medical doctor because I just knew they would give me a cover-up pill. I didn't want to get onto that sort of thing at all. When I learned it was garlic and cayenne, and cayenne is a healer. It is a wonderful herb. I said, I think I'm onto something here. I'll tell you, I wouldn't be without it. It did wonderful things for me.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original and most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
We are GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. We've got listeners, lots of them. Around the world, around the clock, our listeners do what listeners do. They listen. And you know what listeners got? Needs. Needs for your products, your services, and money to buy those needs. With our network of over 1,000 radio stations, streaming on the web, and our satellite transmissions, we're reaching our listeners with quality conservative programming. But there's something our listeners don't have. Your offer to meet their needs. Any business needs buyers. But if our listeners don't hear your message, they're still going to buy what they need. Just not from your business. So let's fix this. Tell us about your business. Then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message for our GCN listeners. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
As we continue here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney. Hey, coming up, a conversation with Nikki Nanos, who's a tremendous public speaker. She talks about the fact that, guess what, at some point in your life you have to get up and speak. Here are easy things to do so you don't have to be a nervous wreck. And then we also have a conversation with Don Bill. He talks about writing a novel and what prompted him to do that. You go from running the farm to writing a book. See, lots of people have books inside them. They just don't sit down and do them. I mean, a lot of people who tell me they want to write a book, they just can't get themselves to do it. If you have a book inside you, I encourage you, do it. Just take 10 minutes a day, write every single day, and it'll pour out of you. All right, so let's zig and zag in a couple of different directions. Let's jump into the politics of the day. You have the President Trump's acknowledgement of a meeting between Donald Trump Jr. and a Kremlin-aligned lawyer, which now they say is contradicting a statement he dictated for his son in 2017. In a tweet, the president called the meeting totally legal and distanced himself pretty much by saying, I did not know about it. So we keep going into this Russian interference thing, and what does it mean, and what does it mean for the president, if anything at all? So he's tweeting about his personal legal issues, I guess, and if I was his lawyer, I would tell him, don't do it no matter what, but it's out there, and that clearly in that one tweet, it is kind of, I don't know, it's kind of interesting because the lawyer who they I guess primarily talked about a program about the adoption of Russian children, and so that's the thing. That's what some of the conversation apparently was about. So if you're Robert Mueller, what are you looking at? You're looking at whether the president obstructed justice, and does this give him any evidence of that, because is it misleading or not? The whole idea of what social media and then what's said and what was said before is gosh, really interesting to see where they're going to go with this. I mean, you know, certainly one of the craziest, trickiest things about the president who tweets is that he tweets, he just says what he thinks, which is what so many of us like. But then he admits or acknowledges things in writing that would be really hard to come up with from other presidents. So, you know, and the final words of the tweet were, "I did not know about it," but this is something that keeps coming up, the whole Trump Tower meeting stuff. And then you have Michael Cohen, who is supposedly telling people that Trump did know about the meetings, and, you know, what specifically was at the meetings. This is the same thing that we keep hearing over and over and over and over again. So there's no end to this riddle at this point, but it's interesting that Twitter, I mean, if I were the president's lawyer, I would be like, oh, could we stop the tweeting because of how the tweets are, how they come out and how they could be used in a court of law or misconstrued or, you know, whatever. Sad to me what happens at the VA. I was at a VA, a really actually nice one a couple of weeks ago, but I know that there are so many veterans that struggle with so many issues, and I was reading a story in the Washington Post about phones that ring in the morning and ring at night, and that you've got people that are answering the phones, veterans who can't get a hold of their doctors, veterans who need to talk about what they saw, sadly, in Afghanistan, Iraq, or even Vietnam, and the calls that they take, the amount of calls that they take, they say it's just absolutely incredible how many veterans are suffering out there. Not a shock, I don't think, to many of us, but how many calls go through every single day. And to the, you know, to the count of, there's 60 on a typical day, there's 60 customer service agents 24 hours answering these phones, and there are 107,000 calls that have come in since just, you know, within approximately, it's not a day, in approximately 60 business days. And I think it's more about listening than anything else, and that's what they're saying. And then they can get 500 to 600 a day. So I think it's good that there's a number, but geez, this hotline, and by the way, the new hotline for anyone listening is 855-948-2311. It's a helpline, call centers, that kind of stuff. And I think it's great. I mean, I think it's great that there's a place to go, but boy, how sad is that? Getting through those calls and listening to the stories and wanting to do even more than they can do. I mean, it's people filing for disability, people trying to get to a doctor, people struggling with what else they're struggling with as a result of what they suffer from. But, you know, is this, you know, now people are calling this hotline for desperate for help, and where do we funnel them after that? I think it's good that there's a helpline, and that's why I gave that number out, because we want to avoid anybody, any loss of life or any horrible thing happening because somebody cannot get through to somebody and talk to them. And that's what a big part of this is. Who can I talk to? Who can I have a conversation? You know, this is just awful. All right, and how about the story about Les Moonves? Boy, the allegations in this just keep on coming. And CBS has now felt like they have to say, look, our culture is very safe and we're welcoming of women. So no issues of gender bias or sexual harassment had plagued that culture and that much, because you can remember you had Charlie, what's his name, that did the PBS show that was also there on the CBS Morning News. How quickly I forget, because I used to love his show. But anyway, they haven't had too much to deal with it. So what they're saying is, we're not perfect. No company is. Kelly Call, who is the entertainment president, said about the allegations about Moonves, she says, there's always room for improvement. I'm confident the culture is safe. Or he said that many female colleagues have come to him who have been saddened by what they read about the company, but it doesn't represent CBS. So in other words, they're trying to scramble to get the parachutes out and figure out what's going on here. There was a semi-annual Television Critics Association's press tour in Beverly Hills. So, you know, they do that because they're talking about what's coming up, what they're offering, get excitement for their new shows. And Moonves, if you don't know, CBS's chief executive, was accused by six women of harassment. And I just thought of his name, Charlie Rose, by the way, from CBS. He was on the morning show. So CBS's chief executive was accused by six women of harassment and various forms of sexual misconduct in this New Yorker story that came out just a week and a half ago, and it also alleged a corporate culture that tolerated and protected violators. Moonves has denied harassment or assault. CBS has launched an outside investigation into what happened, and they're waiting to see what that yields. And they're talking about, you know, it's interesting, a reporter asked, do you believe CBS needs to undergo radical culture change? And he said, I believe we take workplace safety very seriously. Up and down the halls of CBS, you'll find a safe environment. So this is, you know, this is just more of the same that we're seeing in all kinds of places. And, you know, they talked about the fact that Murphy Brown's coming back, and they're saying that the fourth episode is going to be called Murphy, hashtag Murphy 2, and they're not talking about what the plot's about, but obviously it's like that whole, you know, Me Too thing, and that's what's interesting about CBS. They have a couple of shows that are coming back, and Murphy Brown is one of them from the 80s. That was a popular 80s show, if you remember, so the same creators back, etc. But the concern at CBS, at BlackRock, is about what's happening with these allegations over Les Moonves, and is there anything there, or does he end up getting cleared of that, or, you know, ultimately what happens, where do they go from there? And the answer is, at this point they don't know. That's why they have the outside investigation going on, and this is what constantly happens. I'll tell you what, investigators must be beyond busy with what's been going on lately with since the Me Too thing cracked open, thanks to Harvey Weinstein, that Pandora's box that was brutal, that thank goodness opened up, but it's really changed, I think, the way corporate cultures are going to have to, certainly in the future, are going to have to operate, because they can't afford to put themselves in those positions where they're wide open for lawsuits, problems, you know, anything else that you could possibly imagine, because nobody was paying attention to that in the past, and now obviously it's a very, 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 very big deal. All right, hang with us. Coming up next, we're going to introduce you to a farmer turned author here on America Tonight with me, Kate Delaney.
If you owe money to the IRS, you need to hear this. The IRS is cracking down on those who owe back taxes. It starts with a devastating letter, and if you don't act immediately, you could find yourself having your wages garnished or have a lien placed on your property. But there's a solution. Tax 10,000 can help. Avoid enforced compliance, where these holds on your income and seizure of your home could become a nightmare that just won't end. Call 800-239-9957 now and speak to one of our experts. 800-239-9957 is the number to link you directly to a tax resolution specialist who will negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Working through the IRS Fresh Start program, all the forms will be handled for you. All you have to do is make the toll-free call. 800-239-9957. Find out if you qualify and possibly save yourself thousands of dollars, not to mention a lot of headaches. It could be the best call you've made today. That number again, 800-239-9957. The service does not provide tax settlement or legal services. We will refer you to a company that does provide such services. Often the IRS will not agree to any reduction in the amount owed. Not all taxpayers who owe more than $10,000 will qualify for a tax reduction program.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
For USA Radio News, I'm Rick Vincent. Another dozen women have stepped forward to sue former gynecologist Dr. George Tyndall and USC. They say Tyndall sexually harassed and assaulted them during medical exams over a period of decades. Attorney Gloria Allred is representing them.
For the betrayal of trust and for the serious damage that they have inflicted on the vulnerable young women, students at USC.
Chicago's top cop says he's tired of the violence. At least 10 people were killed and 53 injured in shootings between Friday and Sunday in the Windy City. Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson blames the violence on repeat offenders.
This is a small subset of individuals who think they can play by their own rules because they continue to get a slap on the wrist when we arrest them.
City leaders, including the mayor, are calling for tougher gun laws. 200 active-duty military members are being called in to help fight wildfires in Northern California. You're listening to USA Radio News.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-296-1261. 800-296-1261. 800-296-1261. That's 800-296-1261.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
And, you know, what's interesting about that is it definitely hits on themes I like, because, you know, I've talked about this on America Tonight, but a crime, small town police, I just think, really, what's that like? What's that about? And we're talking about a book that takes place in a novel that takes place in Georgia. Very, very intriguing. And it also includes two prisoners who escaped while they were being transported back to the Louisiana prison farm, and they ended up in Powers Trace. So, Don, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
Let's talk about, first of all, what led you down the road wanting to do this novel?
I guess the basic part would be that I had the time to do it. I had already retired from the accounting work and the Air Force and all that. So I was kind of wandering around playing golf every day. I had this idea in the back of my head for quite a while, and I finally just sat down and started at it, and that's what came up.
Well, you know, they say when you write a novel, it's based on some things from your life, things you kind of embellish a little bit, things that you've learned along the way. So I imagine a lot of that is peppered into it. This is kind of interesting for people listening, the whole writing process. As you said, you were playing golf, which, by the way, I'm a kindred spirit there. I love to play golf. But you're right. After a while, you would want to do something else, and this was rattling around in your brain. So when you decide you're going to sit down, you're going to write this novel, from the time you started having all these ideas and you put it down on paper, on the computer, et cetera, how long did it take you?
To get started, probably about 2 years. Kind of, I had to find a place to put my wife, get her out of the way. So finally, I built a little room, a little office desk, thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started going. I read someplace, they call it a stream of consciousness. I think that's what I was doing. Just had an idea, and I took it from there and put a story together just in order. And it was a lot of fun, really.
So as you did that and you started to put it, stream of consciousness, were you sometimes people, when they write, Don, are really rigid and, like you said, you had to get a spot for your wife. I understand that, because you needed some peace. You needed to be able to take a breath and do what you were going to do. But did you have a certain time? Was it like, oh, I got to get up in the morning, I get my coffee, I start to write, and then I stop after a while? Or no, it just was when the mood hit you?
Oh, no, there wasn't anything like that, but I did get a routine going. We did whatever we had to do during the day, and then about 11 o'clock at night, I'd watch the news, go back in my little room, and start at it. And I could spend 3 hours, and I could spend the whole night back there, depending on how interested I was at the time. But I loved it. Dealing with these people was a joy for me.
Yeah, it's so neat because, as I said, Powers Trace is a fictional small town in Georgia, small town. So tell us about the novel. Give us some tidbits on this little town and the police and what it was like for them. Long hours, small pay, right?
Oh, that's true. And I've been around the places here in Georgia, small town, and I talked to some of the guys. And they seem to like the job enough that they will do it without the big paycheck. And that really turned me on for that. So we went with that. But basically the book, I think you mentioned it a while ago, the bad guys broke out from a trip from middle Mississippi back down to the prison farm, and they ended up stealing cars on the way. And they wound up in our church, and it all began from there. In the meantime, I tried to put in all the little trinkets that you get from small towns. If you ever been in the Grand March, that was the highlight of their year. That's the one where everybody lines up, and they come down to the Grand Marshal and turn around and go back up, wind up with 64 people abreast charging the stage. That's their highlight. So you can visualize it.
I can, and of course you and I both know, in a small town, the police, everybody knows each other. It's kind of like Mayberry in a way. And I guess when you were writing it, as you said, you talked to some of the police in the area where you are, and did you get a sense of community?
Oh yeah. Yeah, they all know each other, all love their work. You get them talking, and you can't shut them up. I've been there for.
I love
but
that.
But I loved it. I love putting these guys together, and they all like each other, and that's the reason 5-man police force can get the job done.
Yeah, so for you, when you were putting it together, and, you know, there's that arc in storytelling, so you have the excitement, the breakout, the panic, all of that, and then trying to catch the bad guy. So a lot of that is about trying to catch the bad guy. Did they have a hard time getting to the prisoners?
Well, it kind of fell into place. They had the GBI on them, the Georgia Bureau, and things like that. But there was no big push after these guys until they killed one of the deputies.
So that's sad drama when somebody in law enforcement is killed and one of your own goes down. Certainly people listening to this understand that. Then that becomes even more magnified, whether you're in a small town or a big town.
That's true.
Yeah. What was the reaction to the book? Because I can imagine now people know you've written this book and they've heard about it. And what do they say?
Well, the people that heard about it were the people I know real well here in town, and I passed the book around. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anybody pushing the book on the national level or anything like that.
Right.
But everybody that read it liked it, so I was satisfied.
And then, of course, the question becomes, once you start to talk about this small town and people fall in love with it, are you going to write another one?
Well, I wrote three.
So three, but and will you continue in that series?
Well, I haven't really tried that yet, but it started out as just one book. I was going to see if I could write a novel, and when I started putting all this stuff together, it wound up as an 800-page book. So I knew that one would work. So I just split it in three parts. I put the first book is more or less an introduction. It's only 170 pages. You can sit down and read it in about 3 days. Explains the town, explains characters and all that stuff. And then puts them into this bad guy situation where they're chasing him around town. But then it goes from there to the second book is battling with the influx of drugs coming from the West Coast and then just getting down into the small town stuff. And they didn't know how to handle that, but they worked at it, got it done. And the third book took on the corruption in the county government, those things. But anyway, that's what it was, and I had to split it up, so that's the way I put it in three books.
I like that. So you were really excited about it. You had this tale to tell, and you had a tomb. So you're right. You had to break it down into three different books. Now, so you learned a lot about the editing process. Obviously, you're loquacious, or you're that kind of writer, Don, that you were excited. You wanted to put in details. You wanted to talk more about the town. Was it tough to go through and cut things out and figure that out?
Oh, yes. That's why I got to be 800 pages. I couldn't cut it out. I like these guys, so I let them work.
Do you have a favorite character?
Sure, the chief.
The chief?
Yeah, chief of police. Let me explain him a little bit. He's kind of cute. He's from North Florida. And out of high school, he enlisted in the Army, and they put him into the police, military police business in New York, and he couldn't stand the cold weather. So he kept fighting, and he finally got a transfer over to Europe into the CIS bit. And in the meantime, his mother passed away, of course. You got to have one of those in there. And he came back and got a job with Atlanta. And he worked his way up through the police force in Atlanta over about 10 years. Married a girl that was working for the mayor. And he was on the job. Everybody else had gone home one night. And he got a phone call that there was this disturbance down in the north part of town. So he went down the elevator to get in his car, and there was a guy down there stealing the car. And he turned around with a gun in his hand. And before old Lou could pull his, he got shot twice. Couldn't be a policeman anymore in Atlanta. So he and his wife, Bev, went south, got a little place on the edge of a lake, and were really relaxing. So I know that feeling. So he had got a call from the banker and the chairman of this little town, Powers Trace, and he went over and had a meeting with him, and they talked him into being the police chief because of all his experience. And that's the way it began.
Wow. Fascinating story. Don, stay with us because we would love to have you come back on. So I just want to first have you agree to that. Will you come on and do another interview with us?
Sure.
Awesome. All right. So, Don Bill, we're diving deeper into this cool little town, Powers Trace. Kate Delaney, America Tonight.
Friends, 'cause no one's left and no one's watching. Another animal, just practical, while the sun's still on your skin. I
This is Jessica Armand, founder of My Magic Mud. Our team helped organize a successful effort to remove fluoride from our city's water supply. This is our passion. My Magic Mud Oral Care purifies and brightens your smile naturally. GCN listeners, please support my family business by purchasing our products from your local health food store. We're also available at CVS Pharmacy. Or visit us at MyMagicMud.com and take 10% off now with coupon code GCN10.
Have you had credit challenges, divorce, bankruptcy, or just haven't established your credit yet? If so, getting a decent car loan can be tough. The good news is that there is a place where you can get a car loan at a fair price, regardless of your credit situation. Auto Loan Express can make it happen now when you visit newcar99.com. Here's the deal. If you have a regular job, then there's no reason to keep taking the bus or repairing that old junker. Go to newcar99.com today and fill out our simple online application. We accept over 99% of applicants and can get you behind the wheel of your new car with just a few strokes of your keyboard. No hassles. No third degree. Just fill out the simple online application and start shopping for your next car. So when you're ready to get on the road with your new car loan, visit us online at newcar99.com, where we accept 99% of all applications. newcar99.com. If you have a job, then you qualify. Here's to you and your new car. Visit newcar99.com. newcar99.com.
If you like alkaline water, or know someone that does, you're going to love the Dillon Living Water Bottle. It creates alkaline water on the go, while reducing plastic waste and saving you money. Made with surgical-grade stainless steel, the Dillon Bottle increases the pH up to 9 to deliver both alkaline and antioxidant water anywhere you want it. Alkaline water is healthier, tastes better, and can even boost energy. The Dillon Bottle makes it easy and affordable to be healthy and achieve optimal hydration. Get your Dillon Bottle today at dyln.co. That's dyln.co.
There's a man named Dr. Joel Wallach who is anything but your typical doctor, both a veterinarian and naturopathic physician. Doc asks, why does the United States spend more money on healthcare by far and still rank 50th in health and longevity worldwide? He believes that people should empower themselves with a basic understanding of nutrition, take charge of their health, and attain optimal health and longevity through nutrition, not by toxic prescription drugs that lead to side effects and more toxic prescription drugs. Doc Wallach's message is resonating with an increasing number of Americans who are waking up to all the big government, big pharma, and big insurance manipulation of our healthcare system. I'm George Norrie, and I like what Doc Wallach is saying and doing to enlighten people about healthcare. Visit brightsideben.com and listen to Doc Wallach's Deadly Recipes lecture. It makes a lot of sense, and I urge you to join the Brightside Ben team. Go to brightsideben.com. That's brightsideben.com.
Pleased to welcome to the show tonight Nikki Nanos. She has such an interesting background, and she's got a book out that talks about public speaking, and it's called Act One. She's actually got three acts. What does it take to become a public speaker? And there's five key lessons that we're going to talk about. Nikki, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kate. I'm really excited. Excited to be with you.
Here's the first thing. A lot of people will say, oh, I don't want to be a public speaker. But the thing is, everybody at some point in their life has to give a speech, right?
That's true. I mean, we're in front of people all the time. It's constant communication. We're like doing mini speeches every single day of our lives.
So knowing that, what is one of the first things you tell somebody when they say, oh, my gosh, it's the PTA, it's the city council, it's my job, I have to do a report, it's this opportunity I have, it's even up to all the way up to TEDx talks because they're so popular right now for just ordinary people that are doing extraordinary things. What's one of the first things that you tell them?
Well, the first things I tell them probably is the first thing that they say to me is they're all going like, oh, my God, I'm so freaked out. I'm scared. I don't know how to speak in front of people. And they get all nervous and the nerves kind of take over. So the first thing I talk to them about is really just being themselves and think of it as a conversation between you and a friend and constantly just keep that in your mind. And even when you first get out in front of an audience, is find those friends in the audience and direct to those first few lines to them, because they'll have that smiling face and they'll be receptive to what you're going to say. But there's so much more to it, we all know. And when people talk about being afraid and how do I calm my nerves, one of the things I really say to them is learn how to breathe correctly and take those deep breaths in, not those breaths that go like that, because that constricts you and puts more pressure on your chest. Yeah. And a lot of people do that. And I've seen it even taught wrong on YouTube videos where they say, take in a deep breath. And I'm going, no. You know, you've got to learn to let your lungs expand out this way and your diaphragm fills up from the air from the bottom of your lungs. And it's that diaphragmatic muscle that helps you control things. And when you can take in a deep breath and get it down to that diaphragm, just take it in through your nose, let it go down your esophagus and fill in that, you know, get that little belly that comes out. You see babies breathe like this all the time. We somehow get out of the habit of breathing correctly. And you take it in through your nose and then let it slowly blow out through your mouth. And that really can help people start to calm down before they speak.
Nikki, that's all great advice. What about when you get on a stage and being aware of your body and where you're moving? I've seen people kind of pace like alley cats up and down the stage and get dizzy, frankly, and I'm an easy audience member. And I think that also goes to nerves, too. What do you tell people about planting? Do they plant or do they move a little to the right and the left? Does it depend?
Well, I think the movement should come from you naturally. And one of the first things I tell people is stay still on your points. When you're making a point, that's where you really got to plant yourself solid. You can move on transitions. You can move when you're transitioning to a whole new thought. And you don't even have to say anything. You can use a few words that are transitional words before you get to the next point and then plant yourself again. So that's what I try to make everybody feel that natural movement, because it really is natural in us. It's just that people start concentrating so much on the speaking part and the fear part that they just start wandering back and forth, or they just stand totally still and don't even move. They're like stiff, you know, nothing's moving. They're just, you know, they're like deer in the headlights, you know, kind of thing.
What happens if you get there? And I love that idea to plant when you're saying the point so people can really focus on that and pay attention to that. It goes back to the whole nerves thing again, and you just start to think about other things that you have going on. What happens to people who lose their place? And I've seen some people, sadly, really panic, and I want to just reach out and tell them, just keep going. What do you tell people that they should do if they kind of lose where they are?
If you lose where you're at, one of the things that you can do is you can direct it back to the audience and say, now, what was the last thing I said? And that really is giving them like kind of that little cue that will say like, oh, she just wants to see if we were listening. And they'll tell you, and that gives you sometimes a little time to get back on track. And that can, you know, clue you back in. Or you can kind of have fun with it and say, well, I just lost my train of thought and I thought my 90-year-old mother was having problems, you know. So you can turn it around to the audience in some way, make them laugh with you at the fact. And you could say something, well, I'm going to get back to that, so no problem. You know, we'll get back to it. I know it's going to come back to me somehow and make a joke of it.
Right. And that goes to authenticity. Keep hearing that people want people to be authentic. So it's okay to say what you just said, right? To say, whoops, you know how that is, a short-term memory loss for me. Or I'm thinking, you know, my kids today, I had to drop them off and the dog ran wild and went through a mud puddle or whatever you say. But just being yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. Being yourself. And don't apologize, though, because that's what really, when you start apologizing to an audience going, oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot where I'm at. I don't know what's next. And I'm so sorry. People keep repeating that. And what happens, it draws more attention to the negative. And it's harder to get out of a negative spot than it is making light of it or asking the audience, now, where was I? Or what did I just say? And bringing it back to you. It gives you a moment to, you know, recollect your thoughts. Sometimes even, which we used as actors, because, you know, I have an acting background. And one of the things we used as actors was the fact that we would repeat the last line we said. And that would help us click right back on track again.
There you go. That's a great hint right there.
Yeah.
And we're speaking with Nikki Nana. She's the author of the book Act One, Five Lessons from the Stage for Public Speakers. And you mentioned it. You have an acting background. Tell us a little bit about that. And I think you worked on a pretty popular show.
Yeah, my acting background, really, I've got a Master of Fine Arts in Acting from California Institute of the Arts. Today, California Institute of the Arts is one of the top schools in theater across the country. And that was California. I'm from Michigan originally, did my undergraduate in Michigan. And what, now see, talking about forgetting, what was that last question you asked me?
Yeah, your acting background, because you worked on a big television show too.
Yeah, I did work on Walker, Texas Ranger, and I did locations. I wasn't in front of the camera. I was behind the scenes. But I worked in locations, and the last year and a half that I worked in locations was absolutely fantastic because I worked specifically with the stunt unit. And talk about when you have to work with people, man, that was an incredible experience.
So you saw what it was like. Obviously, actors have to memorize lines. What happens when, and you must have worked with Chuck Norris, and I heard he's a master at memorization. Is that true?
Well, actually, he had a coach, and he had a coach working with him every single morning, going over lines with him. So that helps you because every day you've got new lines, a different scene, everything's out of context. So, you know, you're filming the end of the series first, and then all of a sudden you're going back to the beginning of the series 3 days later. It, you know, just depends on the locations to make it easier for the crew. And so, yeah, so he had a coach that worked with him every day.
So I mentioned that we go back to your book, Act One, and then you've got two other books that are coming out, Act Two and Act Three. And what will they dive into?
Well, Act Two is basically I'm going to focus more on your body, your voice, and your mind and the things and how you can use your voice to help you express things. So, you know, it's like, how are you saying it? And having more expression in your voice, because you don't want to be sitting there listening to someone like this who talks like, because we all know that, you know, that's been used 100 times, but it still always brings us a little laugh to people's face because we've all had professors like that. So learning to just use that flexibility in your voice when you have to speak soft, to, you know, bring it down to that whisper, and that kind of grabs people's attention too. Or when you have to be really big, you know, and get excited about something. So that's what I want to focus on, that because a lot of people don't understand about using your voice and your body. Oh my gosh, gesturing. Gesturing is not just your hands. It's your face. It's your whole body. And I'm one of those people that tells everybody, you got to feel what you're speaking about from the top of your head to the bottom of your toes to the ends of your fingertips. Because if you're not feeling it, you're just like this puppet that's moving. I've seen people speak like this, and I've seen actors do this. All the movement is from the waist up, and the bottom part is totally still. It's like you've got this disconnected body. And so, you know, those are things that I really want people to concentrate on. And then the other thing that I really want to focus on is actually starting to write your speech.
Ah, boy, and we'll have to have you back on to talk about that. Nikki, if people want to find your book, where can they find it, and tell us your website?
Well, the book is on Amazon. It's a Kindle now, so you can download it from Amazon, or you can get it through my website, which is www.nikkinanos.com.
Nikki, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Kate. It's been great.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
Bacon lovers, we ship free. Try our amazing bacon. No refrigeration required. Proprietary value-added packaging provides 10-year shelf life and protects the leanest, thickest, center-cut, fully cooked bacon in America today. Ready to eat right from the pouch or warm and serve.
savory and delicious. Wholesale price for your everyday use. Order today at ReadyToEatBacon.com. ReadyToEatBacon.com.